This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 premieres Monday, May 13th on Exactly Right. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You guys, we have some tour updates for you for the My Favorite Murder live show tour. Are you ready? Listen to this.
Wednesday, September 6th, Auckland, New Zealand. We're going to see you soon. Come to the show.
Sunday, September 10th, we'll be in Melbourne at the Comedy Theater. We added a third freaking show.
Tuesday, September 12th, Sydney, Australia at the freaking Sydney Opera House.
Yeah.
That's the second Sydney show. We really want to sell the Opera House out. How cool would that be?
Friday, September 29th, we're going to be at the Fillmore in Detroit, Michigan.
That's the second show that night. Saturday, September 30th, Toronto, Canada. And then we have a couple new tour dates to announce.
It's okay, go. You got it.
All right, and then we have a couple new tour dates. Wednesday, October 18th, Minneapolis. We will be there.
Does that say Minneapolis, Michigan?
It does say Minneapolis, Steven? Michigan. And that's why I didn't say it.
Wait, where's Minneapolis? Oh, shit.
You just Georgia'd real hard.
Wait, where's
Minneapolis, Michigan?
Oh, Minnesota.
Oh, whoops. Even sorry. I know that one.
Guess I'm going to Minnesota.
It's not just okay, so we're going to be in Minneapolis on Michigan. Wednesday, October 18th.
Yeah, Saturday, November 11th, Dallas, Texas. There's a late show.
And also Saturday, December 9th, we'll be in Kansas City. We're adding a late show at the Midland Theater.
Fuck yeah, Kansas City. Oh, go to myfavoritemurder.com/live. We also made a Facebook event page on our Facebook, myfavoritemurder.com/MFM podcast, with links to buy the correct non-scalped tickets.
Yes, and then also once you get your tickets, those are the pages to go to check if there are any updates, if you hear rumors of cancellation, if you hear anything to change, just go to our MFM Facebook live show pages and you can get all the latest information there.
Right. So a presale is on now and the password for presale is Murderino in all lowercase.
Bye. Bye.
Sim, this is when you're supposed to talk.
Well, this is part two. I'm excited that we're all back here. Thank you for showing up again.
No problem. It's a long drive, but worth
great.
It. Oh, it's so crazy you're wearing the same.
I know.
Well, I love it, though. Yeah.
This is my Thursday shirt.
All right, so we're going to start with Anna first. She's going to do her favorite murder. After that, we'll go to Georgia. You'll do yours. We have one more advice call, and then we're done with the show.
Okay.
Are we calling this My Favorite Unqualified?
My Favorite My Unqualified. Favorite. I love it.
Did we already?
Can I? I didn't mean to cut you off, Georgia.
There was nothing else to say.
I feel that way all the time.
I wish you would just start.
Okay. So I have to tell you, though, I have to qualify this with this is actually like a story that I remember very vividly and kind of has sort of haunted me throughout Hollywood and the idea of sort of becoming well known, shall we say, famous.
Oh my god, oh my god.
I think I might
do
know.
You
maybe what? I have two ideas of what it could be.
It's like, as all of these stories are horribly tragic.
Oh, I know it.
You do?
I bet I do.
What?
No, I'm excited.
No.
It's terrifying because I live here in a weird home.
Give them your address.
And anytime there's a ding dong in the back of my mind, this story comes up a little bit, which is Rebecca Schaefer.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Is that what you were going to guess? You were? Karen, you were going to guess it?
It was either Rebecca Schaefer or Teresa Saldana is the other one.
Yes.
Okay. I was going to guess Sharon Tate. So I was worried.
Oh, I couldn't go quite there. Yeah. But
I can never do that.
This is one of the most, well, they're all tragic stories, aren't they?
It's so sad.
Okay, so Rebecca was born November 6, 1967 and raised in Portland, Oregon. And she wanted to grow up being a rabbi, but when she was 14 years old, her good looks caught the attention of a cattle call, which my good looks never caught the attention of a cattle call.
My good looks caught the attention of a temple, of a rabbi.
Hey. At a local modeling agency, less than 2 years later, in 1984, after appearing in a number of Portland area publications, she went to New York to pursue her modeling career. Her modeling career didn't take off due to being only 5'7", which,
poor thing. Gross.
So she decided to focus on acting, quickly appearing in television commercials, 17 Magazine, Woody Allen's film Radio Days, and One Life to Live. So she became very successful. She was a stunningly...
Who was she in Radio Days?
It was cut.
Oh, son of a bitch. That movie's so good.
In 1986, at the age of 18, her work caught the attention of Los Angeles casting directors, and she was cast in the CBS sitcom My Sister Sam, playing the character of Patty. Sam's girl next door sister. What the fuck?
Who wrote this shit?
Yeah. Okay, anyway, now she's living in LA. Rebecca was on the fast track to stardom.
Can I just say that my sister and I loved My Sister Sam from the second it came out. We loved her so much. She was just she looks like one of those classic all American girls. Curly hair, great face.
Beautiful.
But also like sweet.
Yeah, you could feel her positive, because I watched it too, and you could feel like her, I don't know, I hate to say positive energy, that sounds like a very LA thing to say, but a warmth.
She had the Sandra Bullock feel to her, where you're like, I'm friends with her already.
Yeah.
So now we have the stalker. Oh, the stalker comes into play.
She's always a fucking stalker.
Yep. Robert John Bardo. So he was a 19-year-old Tucson resident. Bardo repeatedly had a troubled childhood, an alcoholic mom, and mentally ill father. He was abused by one of his siblings and placed in foster care after he threatened to commit suicide. He was diagnosed with manic depression and at one time institutionalized for a month for emotional problems.
Don't put your fucking kid in foster care if he wants to kill himself.
No kidding. So beyond that timeline, beyond that, it says here on my info sheet, beyond that Tim time, he received professional help.
Steven, goddammit.
Beyond that Tim time, he received professional help. Back to my sweet Rebecca. At age 16, before stalking Rebecca, he stalked a child peace activist, which I always thought was an interesting detail.
Is like, that her choice?
How do you find the child peace activist? But anyway,
sorry, TV or something.
Wonderful woman named Samantha Smith, who tragically died in a 1985 plane crash, which weirdly was a year of a lot of plane crashes.
85?
Yeah, 1985.
Is that John Denver?
I don't know.
Probably.
Don't ask me too many questions. I just got to read the Tim time sheet, okay?
Karen usually knows these weird, obscure facts.
I was scraping my brain. Was that the one where the rugby team ate each other?
Maybe. That counts for three, that one.
Anyway, so this fella, Bardo, he was lonely and he spent a lot of time watching television, believe it or not. he discovered Rebecca's sitcom, My Sister Sam, and he became pretty smitten. He saw her as beautiful and wholesome. Wholesome. Ugh. God, can I even say that again? Wholesome? That's like how you describe oatmeal. But innocent, I think, is sort of the major point that we will get to later. And he collected her magazine covers and talked about her as if they were friends. I don't know who you talked to her about, because I don't think he had a lot of friends. Maybe he just...
The grocery store clerk.
Yeah, he's like...
Whoever he bought the magazine from.
So over the course of 3 years, he wrote, you know, a ton of letters to Rebecca. And one letter was answered by an employee of Rebecca Schaefer's fan club. And he was encouraged by that. He came to Los Angeles hoping to meet her on the set of her sitcom, My Sister Sam. But he was turned away by Warner Brothers security. He was pissed. He returned a month later armed with a knife, But security guards once again prevented him from gaining access to the actress. I don't know why.
You can't get onto that Warner Brothers lot. You can't.
Not the first time. The second time, they're like, come on in.
I would love it if somebody was like, I got a knife. I got to see her.
Oh, well, then you should have said that the last time you were here. Sir.
Okay. So he later said that he brought the knife because he thought Rebecca was becoming too arrogant. The security weirdly thought that he was just harmless and lovesick. And he was never reported to the police.
No.
So once again, very upset, he returned to Tucson and lost focus on Schaefer for just a little while. His obsession shifted towards pop singers Debbie Gibson and Tiffany.
Oh, I mean, mine did too, but I wasn't a fucking psychopath.
I mean, 85. What choice did we have?
Right?
They were on their mall tours.
Yeah.
So during this period, he was arrested 3 times on charges, including domestic violence and disorderly conduct. Okay, now we're getting to the actual tragic event. And I hope our listeners know and everybody knows that I'm simply like the scary movie 1, 2, 3, 4 actress, not 5, too
Wait,
old.
What? Wait, so explain it to me. I did not understand that.
Well,
she's been in all the scary movies.
Okay, yeah.
Been in all the scary movies. But But fame is an odd thing. And I don't think that... I hope nobody comes over and does a ding dong.
There's so we could talk about this for a half an hour.
Right. But I do but the obsession with fame is something that at times has freaked me out just a little bit, not too much, because, you know, I'm simply that other one, not like a beautiful 21-year-old who stars on a massive, well...
Honey, it's okay. You're not going to seem arrogant.
Oh, thank you.
If you are scared of psychopaths.
Okay. So on June 3rd, 1989, our murderer turned his attention back to Rebecca after watching her in the black comedy Class Struggle in Beverly Hills.
Have you seen that?
Yes. But is that the name of it? It's not Class Struggle in Beverly Hills. Is it...
Truth, Beverly.
No, it's right. Class Struggle in Beverly Hills. Yeah.
Oh, do you guys want to fight?
Oh, sorry.
That'd be amazing.
I'm thinking of the one with Nick Nolte.
Right. No, this was like a B movie.
Oh, sorry. Show it
anymore. No. So she had a scene in bed with a man. Oh, and and Bardo went into a jealous rage and decided that she should be punished for becoming another Hollywood whore.
Fucking arrogant piece of shit.
I know. He believed that she had lost her innocence. So he paid a detective agency $250 to find Schaefer's home address in California DMV records.
No.
And Bardo's brother helped him get a handgun because he was only 19. I guess maybe in Tucson you can't get a gun. Laws have changed. You can get a gun now when you're 9.
You actually get one automatically when you're 8 years old.
An automatic, automatically.
Okay, so on July 18th, 1989, he traveled to Los Angeles a third time. I bet. Do you think he drove or did
he? I think he took a bus, right? Yeah. I remember watching like a reenactment thing and he's like, doo-doo-doo, off a bus, like a Greyhound. Like, I bet he smells.
Wonderful. Okay, so he went to her apartment, which is in the Fairfax District, around 6:30 a.m.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine? So he rang the doorbell. The intercom was not working that day. Mm. Oh, that fucking manager.
Oh, my God. Manager and detective need to go on an island.
Yes.
And stay there.
So Schaefer was, she was up preparing for an audition for the role in Godfather Part 3. Oh, she was up so early. So she answered the door. Bardo showed Schaefer a letter, an autograph that she had previously sent him, probably through the agency that like sends that stuff out. Rebecca thanked him and said she was busy and had to go. So then Bardo went to a local diner and had breakfast, and he was very disappointed. An hour later, 10:15 a.m., he returned to Schaefer's apartment for the second time. Schaefer answered the door again. This is a weird detail.
Mm-mm-mm.
I know, it's weird. Wearing a black bathrobe, which maybe she looked, of course she looked incredibly hot, and maybe that agitated him even more. Mm. She was about to get dressed for her audition. He pulled a gun from a brown paper bag and shot her in the chest, point blank range, in the doorway of her apartment building. And Schaefer apparently became screaming, why? She collapsed in her doorway as Bardo fled. A neighbor phoned paramedics who arrived to transfer to Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, and she was pronounced dead 30 minutes after her arrival. And she was 21 when she died. And so anyway, he was arrested a day later in Tucson, Arizona, after motorists reported a man running through traffic on the 10, and he immediately confessed to the murder. So in 1991... he was brought to trial and prosecuted by Marcia Clark.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah. And during the trial, Bardo claimed that the U2 song Exit was an influence in the murder. The song played in the courtroom as evidence.
Which one is that? Someone sing it to me.
I don't know that one.
Every breath.
No.
I swear to God, I feel like U2 would know so much trivia. And I'm sorry.
No, I don't. Yeah. Oh, boy. This is a hard one for me to talk about bit. Well, they're all hard, aren't they?
They're all awful.
Yeah. Yeah. So Bardo's attorneys argued that he was mentally ill, that schizophrenia had led him to commit the murder. So he was convicted of capital murder and he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But here's the good, sort of good news after all of this is that, the Driver's Privacy Protection Act was enacted in 1994, which prevents the DMV from releasing private addresses. Mm-hmm. So there are now anti-stalking laws in every state. And in 1989, in the wake of the murder, LA police created the nation's first team specializing in stalking investigations. Also, California was the first state to criminalize stalking in the United States in 1990, following her murder and a string of other high-profile assaults. But also, that also came on the heels of Teresa Saldana. So that is something that I just resonates with me just because of the obsession, I guess, with fame and how scary sometimes it can be when people feel very familiar with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know you, so it's not weird to them that they're coming to talk to you, and they don't ever flip it and see that it's like something out of the blue. Also, it just kills me because that idea of like, you move to LA, you get a job, you get like a good apartment, and you're in that mode. I'm sure she didn't think I'm famous because she was like, it was like, you know, she's on that show. Maybe she's in one movie or whatever. But
and I feel like in LA, you get people talk to you a lot less. Like they know that, you know.
And I think that people maybe think that, like I imagine now, like at the time, she probably was making a nice chunk of change, but probably not enough. She was still living in an unsecured apartment.
Right.
And because why wouldn't she necessarily be? And I just want you two to know that I have a fucking ton of cameras around here.
Do you?
That's fucking right. So either of you try to take me out.
I've already spray painted over half of them. I'm going to finish.
Fuck you.
Before this.
Well, listen, like I want to reiterate, I'm 40.
You know.
That's it? Like, that's all
not,
I got?
It's not the sexiest of murders if somebody comes. Like,
I'll just say, to make you feel better, it took me fucking forever to find this house. So... I think you're okay, even if they could break into it.
Yeah. Give them the address and be like, I bet you can't find it. Go ahead.
Challenge.
It is. I mean, it's a super sad. Sometimes those are the only highlights of when we tell our stories is stuff like that where, you know, it's such a tragedy that Rebecca Schaefer had to die. But then they finally were like, oh, that's right. You shouldn't be able to know anyone's address.
Right.
And you shouldn't be able to walk up to anybody's house. And you shouldn't, if you tell 8 people that you're obsessed with somebody, that should count against you.
Yeah.
You know, stalking is a very serious thing.
That wasn't, and it's probably still not taken seriously by a lot of law enforcement officials.
Well,
no,
I mean,
offense.
It is now.
Right.
It is the point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you were saying that it hasn't been taken seriously because there's so much ego involved. Like there's a dismissal of that, especially as a woman. Having said that, if anyone out there would like to stalk me,
No.
Please submit your application.
No.
Let us know.
Cancel.
History of violence.
Edit that out.
Wow, that's, I'm so sorry, Doc.
Oh, that was a rough one.
I know, yeah. I know.
So sad.
But like you were saying, Karen, that thankfully it's changed some things.
Well, and also the Teresa Saldana story is so insane. I saw that as a kid on TV, the made-for-TV
movie. Is she the sister from Poltergeist?
That's Dominic Dunn's daughter, Dominique. Right. No, it's, it was the woman who was the wife in Raging Bull. So she was just starting her acting career and getting kind of amazing parts. And she also had a stalker. And she and he did the exact same thing. He walked up to her apartment door and stabbed her. And actually, the Culligan man was walking up delivering water to somebody else's apartment. And he got, I think he saved her. He either pulled the guy off of her or like got her, like he, the Culligan man saved her life. And she, you know, went on to advocate for all those laws too.
That's like the end of so many of our stories are like, you know, the victim's family then went on to
do great things,
amazing
right?
things. That's like the only way I feel like you can personally survive these horrific things happening is if you try to make it worth, like make their
tragedy worth, right. Like hopefully prevention of
like we've done tragedies. Amber Alert girl Megan's Law, you know, the
that's why I keep the guillotine though outside the house.
Warning,
just as a kind of like a symbol, like,
yeah,
warning,
like, yeah, come fuck with me, yeah, I'll come, fuck with you, yeah, dicks.
Here's
it's
what
just
I'm like.
A FedEx guy standing there, like, I just have some packages for you. You fucking with me?
Yeah.
Oh, you're bringing me my clothes?
Yeah. All right.
Oh, okay. I'll take those. That's fine.
But don't fuck with me. Yeah. But give me my fucking boots.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye. Hey, Karen, you know that feeling when you're stressed out and your heart starts to pound and your mind is racing?
I do. I know it well.
Well, while there's no cure for stress, therapy can help shape your response to it. And since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, there's no better time to try Talkspace.
When you sign up for Talkspace, you'll receive a personalized match with a therapist or psychologist, typically within 48 hours.
Forbes rates Talkspace as the number one online therapy platform, plus their licensed professionals are in-network with almost all major insurance companies.
Once you meet your therapy goals, or if you want to cancel for any reason, Talkspace will provide you with a prorated refund for unused time. I feel like these days people understand the importance of therapy, but the difficult part is just taking that first step. It took me months to make my first therapy appointment. I was so scared. I had a lot of ideas in my head about it. And that's why I think Talkspace is such a good idea, because making it so approachable will just get you there sooner. Then you can actually get in there, figure out what you need, talk to an actual professional, and be on your way to solving some stuff that you might want to solve.
To celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month and the power of talking it out in therapy, Talkspace is offering our listeners $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80.
Go to Talkspace.com/MFM and use promo code SPACE80.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/MFM and enter promo code SPACE80 and get $80 off your first month and show your support for our show.
That's Talkspace.com/MFM. Enter promo code SPACE80.
Goodbye.
Georgie, what do you have for us?
Well, I have a serial killer I'd never, ever heard of.
Ooh.
And one of those, like, there's this BuzzFeed or some website that I've found that like the craziest murderer in every state, and this guy was Florida, so you know he's fucking top notch. You know what I mean?
I love it that we have like Washington crazy serial killers and then it's like, yeah, I love it.
All right. And we're doing three shows in Florida, and Florida was like, when are you gonna come to do a live show here? And we're like, oh, you have the best murders, we're coming there for three shows. Like, there's no other state that we're doing three shows in. All right, September 15th, 2004. So friends of Michelle Jones, she's a pretty vivacious 37-year-old executive at the Golf Channel in Orlando, were worried because they couldn't reach her, which is like the beginning of every murder story, right? Michelle's aunt and uncle, Charlie Brandt and Terry Helfrich, were staying with her for a few days because they had been evacuated from their home in a seafront villa near Key West. There was Hurricane Ivan was coming, and they had to get the fuck out of there. Michelle is like the niece, and they're like very...
the least sexy name for a hurricane, sorry.
Ivan. Ivan. Did you hear the thing about how hurricanes named after women kill more people?
Oh, no.
Because they don't take them seriously. People don't take them seriously when they're named after women. Anyway, she's close with her aunt and uncle. She invited them to stay with them. So Michelle's mother, who was Terry, the aunt's sister, called one of Michelle's friends and was like, can you go check on her? So the friend finds their mail overflowing, newspapers from days earlier on the lawn. No one's answering the door when she knocks. The door's locked. She walks around to the garage, sees lights on through the windows. There's cars parked in the driveway. So she calls the cops. They arrive, they enter the home, and quickly run back out and vomit in the yard, horrified by what they had found inside. So inside, reclining on the couch, is the body of Michelle's aunt, Charlie's wife, Aunt Terry. She's been stabbed 7 times in the chest, and then her clothes had been removed, but she hadn't been sexually assaulted. In the bedroom is Michelle's body. She'd been stabbed only once, but then she had been disemboweled. Her heart and organs had been removed, and she had also been decapitated, and her head was sitting next to her body.
I can't believe you didn't lead with that part.
There's a lot.
This is like walking Karen, us through the house. We're going room by room.
We're going room by room. Karen was like, should we warn people about the murders first? And I was like, don't worry, mine's way fucking worse. So we should warn this. So her head's next to her body. The weapons that have been used in the crime were the knives from her own kitchen. Then in the garage, Uncle Charlie, we find in a state of decomposition because of the heat, Uncle Charlie's body is hanging from his neck by a sheet from the rafters. He's dead. And then the investigators determine that it was a suicide. So there's
seems
no,
like it,
right?
I mean,
there's no suicide note. And there's no way of knowing exactly what happened, but because of the lack of a break-in or any other explanation, they conclude that Charlie was the murderer and it had been a murder-suicide. So Uncle Charlie, I'm going to call him that because it's easier to remember him. He's described by all as a mild-mannered, loving husband, all-around good guy.
Aren't they all?
Aren't they always called that? But he was known as being a bit of an oddball and eccentric. But by all accounts, including Aunt Terry's best friend, Charlie loved her very deeply, and the couple was inseparable. No one ever detected any problems or saw a fight in the relationship or anyone's temper. In fact, here's something annoying. They would make each other's lunches every morning because they said that food made by someone you love tastes better than when you make it yourself. Which, can you imagine that couple? And you're like, can you guys shut the fuck up and just like eat your lunch?
It sounds like a great way to make someone like make your food for you.
Yeah,
exactly right.
I want a peanut butter and jelly, but I love the way it tastes when you make it.
So much better when you do it, all the chores.
When you unfreeze my chicken nuggets. When the investigators began to look into the murder-suicide, Uncle Charlie's older sister, Angela, is like, hold up, I got to tell you guys something. This has been a secret. A family secret for 30 years.
Here we go.
Yep. 1971, Uncle Charlie is just 13. His father had recently killed his dog during a hunting trip with Charlie. The dad says he did it on accident, but he had shot the dog twice, And also Uncle Charlie has some difficulty with school assignments, struggling to maintain his grades, but he was reportedly a really bright kid. So on the evening of January 3rd, 1971, his dad's in the bathroom shaving. His mother, who's 8 months pregnant, is soaking in the bathtub. Charlie gets up from his homework randomly, grabs a 9mm handgun from his father's nightstand, goes into the bathroom, and shoots his father in the back. Then he walks to his mother, who's in the bathtub. She says, "No, Charlie, no," but he fires at her until there's no more bullets left. This is really fucked up. I should have started with that. I'm sorry that this is...
After everything else that's happened.
Okay. Is this more or less fucked up than most of your murders that you do on your shows?
It's exactly the same.
Yeah, okay. It's pretty right on. Next, he goes to his 15-year-old sister Angela's room. Angela's the one telling the cops about this case. He goes to her room, points the gun at her, and tries to fire. He didn't even know that the gun was empty, and she said that he looked like he was in a trance, so he might not even have been aware that this was like going on and his gun was empty. They start to wrestle. Angela tries to talk Charlie down. She tells him that she loves him and will run away with him, but as soon as she gets a chance, she runs to a neighbor's house screaming for help. Charlie's mom dies, but his father survives, and from the hospital bed says he has no idea why his son would ever commit such an act. When Charlie's evaluated by psychologists, they see no signs of a diagnosable mental illness. They can't pinpoint a motive for the shooting at all. By all accounts, he's like, "I loved my family. I have no idea why I did this." So they said they weren't going to prosecute him because of that and his age, because he's not responsible for his actions. But instead, they send him to a psychiatric clinic. His father visits him very often, and after a year, his dad is able to have him released to his custody, and the whole family moves to Florida to get away from the town's scrutiny. And the murder of his mother is not spoken of again, to the point where his two younger sisters, who were super young when the mom was murdered, didn't even know about it. They thought their mom had died in a car accident until the murder-suicide when Angela told the cops. They didn't know a thing. Charlie gets excellent grades in school. He becomes a radar technician engineer. He finds the note from the BTK killer in the library.
That's right. That was his favorite book.
Mm-hmm.
Referencing the old episode. Yep.
Oh, shit. I forgot that. It's a week later. Angela, his sister, marries a dude named Jim, finds out about the brother, Charlie, murdering their mom, still becomes good friends with him. So once Jim... his brother-in-law and Angela are getting a divorce. On the topic of revenge, Uncle Charlie says, "Well, you know, the perfect revenge is you kill someone and you cut their heart out and then you eat it. That's the perfect revenge."
Whoa.
Okay. Yeah. But Jim, despite that, sets Uncle Charlie up with a friend of his new girlfriend. This friend is Aunt Terry. After 6 months, they get married. Can you imagine setting your fucking friend up with someone who said that?
No.
No. That's the correct answer.
No.
Abso-fucking-tibly not. Let's see. And we don't know if Terry knew or not about the murder of the mother. So let's go back to 2004, post-murder suicide. The police find out about the fucked up stuff from Charlie's past. They begin to take a closer look at the murders of his wife and niece.
So can I really quick ask a question?
Always.
I just don't understand... As a kid, he kills his own mother, tries to kill his father.
And his sister.
And his sister, but the sister lives?
Yeah.
So then he just goes to a psychiatric hospital for a little while, and then they're just like business as usual.
Yeah. Less than business as usual, like hiding stuff. And the dad is like, this is speculation that could get me sued. Can I do this?
Of course.
If I preemptively, we have a lawyer in the room. He must have been, some shit must have been going on in that household that his dad was like, "Nope, I want my kid out of there. Everything's fine." You know what I mean? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, molestation.
Wait, will you spell it out for me again? She said the actual word. I think that's...
Wink. The word was wink.
He winked at his son a lot?
He nudged his kid a little too much. Too much winking and nudging. I don't know, man. It just seems a little too...
So you think the dog thing was almost just like the straw that broke the camel's back, but really he was being molested?
Yeah.
And that's why the father wouldn't turn him in, because that all would come out.
Yeah. And then we have that thing about like... if someone's molesting, if a, you know, like killing the mother as well is always like a really weird thing, because if you have an issue with your dad, why would you, you know, the mother would never step in, that kind of thing. Speculation, Your Honor. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Please approach the bench.
All right. Okay, so they begin to take a closer look. They note that the amputations inflicted on Michelle, the niece, were not amateur, but were accomplished with skill and experience. They search the couple's house. The couple's house is still boarded up from the hurricane. And they find a bunch of fucked up stuff. They find the bedroom door. So bedroom door is open. I never close my bedroom door. When they open it, on the back of the bedroom door is a really creepy illustration poster of the female muscular and skeletal system. Mm-mm. And she has like a bun on her head, and it's like a cartoon drawing. It's like so creepy. It's not just a skeleton. It's like a female skeleton with a face.
And muscles.
And muscles.
So it's like one of those weird, you know, that
anatomy.
Weird,
yeah. Oh, when you like a pop-up book kind of thing?
Well, no, I was thinking of, there was actually an art installation of a guy like, remember the thing? And I was just like, that person is a serial killer that made this. Who would want to go and like show what like people look like with no skin?
Like embalming someone.
Right.
And then putting it up as art.
But really just skinning them anyway.
I got nauseous at that art installation, quote unquote, and had to leave. It was so disturbing.
Of that one of like the human body.
The human anatomy. Bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw it in New York, and I don't have too many regrets in life. I mean, I should have more. But that one is one of my regrets.
Yeah. Oh, considering how much I can read and watch and look at crime scene photos and shit, like that was really fucking, they still had like hair.
Well, and there was all this like these ethical issues of how the bodies were retrieved.
Right. Who were they?
Yeah. And apparently they were whatever.
And like, who would do it? It's so weird.
And who would go to it? Like, we don't need to know that. Well, apparently Charlie did. So, and also despite not being in the medical profession, of course, there were books on human anatomy in a bookshelf, and one of them contained a newspaper clipping of a labeled illustration of the human heart. He also subscribed, here's what's fucking creepy, to Victoria's Secret magazine, and it was like, or catalog, it was like in his name, it wasn't to his wife, and his nickname for his niece, Michelle, who he killed, was Victoria's Secret, he called her. Which is like, don't.
It's not a nickname.
Mm-mm.
It says it's not shorter than her name.
Long as, yeah,
it's not her name.
Longer. Yeah, it's not even close.
They checked out his computer. There was a bunch of erotic websites related to sacrifice, violence, necrophilia, containing photos of torture, rape, and violent deaths, depicting female autopsies. They're all staged. Don't worry. Living models made to look dead. And they came to the conclusion that Charlie was obsessed with his niece, Michelle, had premeditated the murders, and that he was also obsessed with human anatomy, especially the female human anatomy, due to what they found in his house, as well as the observation that the murder of his wife and niece seemed to be the work of a skilled and practiced killer. Police began to look into previously unsolved cold cases in the area, and also in the areas where he would travel for work, which he did a lot, because I guess engineers travel for work a lot. They
train engineers. Come on.
Toot, toot. What's the, you know? They sent out a description of the MO, disemboweled, decapitated, clean cut, surgical precision, and they quickly got a ton of hits from other police stations. So his ties to an additional murder were uncovered by, not investigators, but by the producers of the show 48 Hours, which is like, fuck yeah. There's a really good episode of this on 48 Hours. They passed along the information to the authorities. So in July 1989, off Big Pine Key, Florida, two fishermen found the body of Sherry Parisho. She was 38. She lived in a small boat and had been seen riding her bike earlier that day. She'd been in the water dead no longer than 12 hours. And the site her body was found at was 1,000 feet away from Charlie Brandt's Big Pine Key house. 1,000 feet away. Her head had been severed and her heart had been removed. Charlie resembled the sketch of a man seen crossing the US-1 nearby on the night of the murder. And Jim, the fucking dude who set them up, who had who had set them up, said Terry told him that Charlie came home that night wet and covered with blood around the time Sherry was killed. And she was like, what the fuck? And he was like, I was fishing and I killed some fish. And then in November 1995, along the Miami-Dade County Highway that Charlie would have had to use to get in and out of the Keys, the mutilated body of Darlene Toler, she was 35, she was discovered in a plastic bag, and her head and heart were missing as well. So since then, 26 murders going back as far
what?
as 1973, which is when his dad checked him out of the insane asylum and took him to Florida. So that means he was 15 years old. They have had possible links to Charlie, but six murders have been positively identified and ascribed to Charlie. So Charlie Brandt, the fucking serial killer that I had never heard of, a possibility of 26 murders going back from when he was 15 years old, 2 years after he killed his fucking pregnant mother. That's it.
The head and the heart, huh?
The head and the heart.
Fuck.
I wonder if they named that band Georgia. After it.
Yeah,
I know.
The head and the heart and the hunter. Oh, no, there's an actual. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I've never heard of that guy.
Oh, right?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh. And he was like, he looks so much like my cousin. It creeps me out. Like, my cousin could play him in a movie.
I also feel like that lesson of, like, if somebody just gets up as a 13-year-old and shoots a bunch of people in their family, you can pretty much assume that's not going to end there.
No. And I think the psychologists were like, this is going to happen again. But his dad was like, nope, taking him into custody.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Oh, man.
And how could there not be one little thing that the psychologists found that were like, well, here's, like, everything's fine. Nope. He just killed his parents once, but everything else is fine. That's impossible.
I do. Yeah, it does feel like, I think maybe now, I like to think that there's like, people are much more aware of warning signs, but it's disturbing that even as recently as back in the 90s, like, the warning signs are like, well, you know, people get better, I suppose.
Yeah. Let's have a positive attitude about this guy.
Once he has his own apartment, he'll be fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, thank you for your...
Really?
Latest favorite murder.
There's no real way to transition to a call from this.
I know.
Believe me.
Unless
how do we? Our shows are so different.
Our signs.
Yeah.
So different.
I'm a Taurus.
My sign is stop. It.
I'm Georgia, a Gemini.
What are you?
I'm a Gemini.
Okay. I'm a Sag.
Oh my god.
I have no idea what the fuck sign is. Nor do I want.
I don't either. I have no idea.
You know I'm a Gemini.
Are you? Oh, we're so much fun. Because we're fucking batshit.
Hell yeah.
I actually saw a thing and it had a list of like the most well-known serial killers, and most of them are Geminis.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's Gemini or Virgo.
Virgo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Gemini men are particularly crazy. Gemini girls are just fun drunks. No.
I love you.
All right. Well.
Because I'm the... When someone says that to you, it's because you're crazy. Because you're a right person.
I mean...
Are we ready to call Leah?
Leah.
Yeah, let's call Leah.
All right, let's call Leah. She's in Ohio, and she's 28.
Aren't we all?
Uh-huh. Did you say, aren't we all?
Mm-hmm. Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant? Like, perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my god, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Kraft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient, because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all made in, Made In.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit visit madeincookware.com.
That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello?
Hey, Leah. How are you? It's Sim.
Oh, hi, Sim. How are you?
I'm going to introduce you to Anna right now.
Hi, Leah.
Hi, Anna.
Thank you so much for you know, being with us here tonight.
So, Anna, can you introduce our special guests?
We have Karen and Georgia from My Favorite Murder, which is an awesome fucking podcast.
Hi.
Hi.
It is. Hi.
Hi, Leah.
Leah, you wrote us. You wrote us asking if it's okay to hook up with your cheating friend's ex-husband. Tell us your story. Yeah. I mean, your story is kind of this is interesting.
This is fun.
Start from the beginning.
Okay, so 2 years ago, I was training a new girl at the place where I worked then, and her name was Janie, and she had just moved to Ohio. And she had moved to be with her fiancé, and we found out that her fiancé was actually one of my old friends from high school. So Janie and I, we became really close. I mean, we were doing everything together immediately. We just got along so well. And so we became friends, and it was really fun. It was so fun to hang out with her and her fiancé because, you know, we had a past history, too. So Janie and Dustin, her fiancé, they started to have some problems, and I was the first person to give them advice about them. We kind of lost touch, Janie and I did, when I started a new job that was kind of farther away. But I would stop in every once in a while to my old job and just see her and see how she was doing. The one day I stopped in and she told me that her and Dustin were getting a divorce. And I told her, you know, whatever I can do to help. So the next time that I stopped in, she was there and she looked kind of nervous. And I found out why soon enough. It was because her new boyfriend was there. And it was a boyfriend that she met while she and Dustin were married. So they were together, and I found out she had told me then that she had cheated on Dustin. She had cheated with him with two different guys and starting 3 months into their marriage. They got divorced about a year later. So Dustin had gotten a hold of me because I was kind of, I was going through some stuff and he was going through some stuff and we caught up. And we ended up starting to hook up. And I've been so torn about it because I want to be a good friend, and I guess I've never been in a situation like this before, so it's all kind of weird. Eventually, I thought, you know, I have to at least ask her if we can be friends, and so I did, and she hasn't talked to me since. She was so mad at me for even asking.
Sorry, if you could be friends with Dustin,
exactly, right.
Yeah, if it was okay for Dustin and I to be friends, yes, yeah, to hang out. She got really mad, yeah, and we haven't talked since. So I guess that's kind of where I'm at, is number one, I don't know, is it okay for Dustin and I to be hooking up? It's the best sex that I've ever had in my life.
Then, yeah.
So nice to me. I mean, like, selfishly, I can't.
Honey.
So there's that. And then, and it's also, it's something that I would never, ever do. I would never hook up with a friend's ex in different circumstances, ever.
I think we
And then number two, you know. Should I tell her, I guess?
We've got some answers for you.
Yeah, we have them already.
You're such a sweetheart. You're not a bad person.
No. And you know what? A dude would never be asking these questions.
No fucking way.
And women, we beat ourselves up so fucking much.
Look, here's the thing. She cheated on him. It didn't even matter what she did because you already had a relationship with him. You already knew him before. So she was actually the new friend. And then she got rid of him. So that's like you, it doesn't matter what happens after that, because if that relationship ends, you get to do whatever you want. And her being mad at you after she cheated on him and then has someone else in her life to even want to be friends with him, that is insane. I think you're going by her rules.
Totally.
And you're kind of like taking her framework of the situation then going, is this okay because she said it isn't? It's abso-fucking-lutely okay.
And it doesn't sound like someone that I would really want to be friends with anyway. So you checking in with her and
is generous.
It's so sweet and generous, but not necessary.
Yeah.
You don't owe her anything. And, you know, you guys are, you're not going to get married maybe, but you're getting your fucking sexual healing. And like, it has nothing to do with her in any way. And cheating on someone 3 months into a wedding, you know, that's probably not the, or a marriage. It's not the first time she did that probably.
It wasn't.
Ah, I mean,
it doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter what she does. It doesn't matter.
It's so true. Because it sounds like, you know, you might not value her friendship as much as you do like other friendships or relationships, and life is fucking short, and I don't think you owe her anything.
I mean, in this situation, I think it's interesting the idea that they broke up. I mean, that was over. Right. So it's not, this girl didn't get cheated on by the guy that you're hooking up with. So the idea that she's mad at you when she is absolutely not the victim in this situation, she went and did exactly what she wanted. Mm-hmm. So why don't you get to? Because you should get to. And if you want to get together with that guy, you should get to.
Dude, get to know your fucking body with a man that you date.
Who's nice to you. And I think
I haven't so far. So.
Yeah, good. Sounds like. I think that you wouldn't have called and asked this if you didn't know somewhere in your mind that something was really off about this. And you should.
And I did. Yeah, I felt like it was. But I was surprised. The few people that I kind of ran it by, I got really mixed answers. And I think that's what made me so confused about it.
Well, people are answering based on their own history, not on the situation.
That's right. That's what everybody does.
That's right. Yeah.
If any of my girlfriends who I cared about and loved wanted to hook up with my exes who are good people, I would be so happy for them.
Me too. Yeah, exactly. I would too.
Yeah.
I think that's adult reactions.
Right.
Yeah.
So she might be having more of a high school weirdo reaction.
It's like when you get an awesome pair of boots and your friend is like, I really like those boots. Would it be okay if I also bought those? And some people would be like, no, these are mine. My identity. And other people are like, fuck yeah, I'm so glad you like these
boots. They're so comfortable. Your feet are going to feel amazing.
Yeah. And you celebrate the idea that like, oh, well.
But it's also the thing, I think it's also the thing of it's weird to think that you can make friends with, say, a narcissist. It's weird to think that you could have a good time and have a good relationship with a person who's actually deep down incredibly selfish or incredibly self-serving. So I think you're having doubts because the two of you hit it off and had a good time, but maybe a lot of the reason you had such a good time with her is because the boyfriend was there who you really liked and maybe have liked for a long time.
So he evened it out, the fact that she fucking kind of sucked. That's hilarious.
We did, we had a lot of fun all together. And she and I got really close in a different way. I never even thought about that before.
You're not a bad person.
No.
Just like, we've been telling you, but we have been talking about bad people. But you are not one of them.
You're nowhere near it.
Thank you.
And the fact that you even question if you're a bad person or not based on this, I think proves to us that you're not.
You're a wonderful person.
Yeah.
And please, like, enjoy yourself. Yeah. I don't know. Life is short. Yeah. I don't think you have to, like, I would encourage you to distance yourself. I mean, you already have already from the friend, the gal, but also, you know, I don't know how much social media has to play in all of this, but I would also encourage like easing up on any of that because that always gets anybody into trouble. But I would just like, have, I don't know. You're in your 20s. Yep. Get your nut.
Get yours. Yeah.
All right. Well, Leah, I think this is pretty obvious here at this point.
Leah, are you okay with this?
I am. I mean, thank you. Yeah, I do. I feel a lot better.
Yeah.
Hey, Leah, thank you.
Hey, we love you.
Thank you
so much. I love you too.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye, Leah.
Get laid.
We love you.
Did
you say get laid?
Yeah.
Bye. All right. This is, we're coming to an end here.
I guess Sim's doing the finger.
Wow, he's, that's it. That's the wrap it up finger.
He's giving us the finger.
Yeah.
This was amazing, guys.
You guys, thank you so much.
Oh my God, it was
thank
so you fun.
Thanks for being in my creepy house, in the creepy room, talking about incredibly creepy things.
It's such a creepy thing.
And you gave amazing advice.
This is a lot of fun. I mean, let's do this once a year if we can. You want
totally
it?
Totally. For sure.
We're once a week or once
week
a year?
We're going to be here.
All right, let's do it once a week. Perfect. Sounds good. Anything, do you want to tell people to follow you anywhere or anything?
I don't know. Sim is always telling me to do this part.
I don't know. I don't really know how to do it. Yeah, we have like social media on Instagram and stuff. I'm sure you guys have it too.
Follow Steven. Steven Ray Morris.
Okay, your producer, Steven Ray Morris.
Yeah. Our Twitter is my fave murder. Sometimes yeah. I can't okay find it because great. I don't know. That's the way I made it. I don't remember why.
We are at Unqualified. I guess we're because we're promoting on your show as well.
Oh, so yeah. That's right. Where can everyone find you guys?
They can find us. Unqualified, subscribe, leave a review.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much.
Anna, stay sexy. Oh, no, let's
go on.
And don't get murdered.
That's how we always end ours. Wait, now you go yours.
I always say, fuck you, Sim.
Oh, fuck you, Sim.
Fuck you, Sim. Don't get murdered.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Good night. Love you, listeners.